Tatu Cole is a Nigerian-American author, and in 2012, he published his first full-length novel, Open City. And such was its success that an earlier work, a novella called Every Days for the Thief from 2007, is now being released in Ireland and the UK. Ethna Shortall has been reading it for us, and she joins me now. Ethna, can you begin with an introduction to this author, Tatu Cole?
Yeah, well, I would start by saying that I hadn't heard of him before this book, and I'm very glad I have now. He's, as you said, Nigerian-American. He was born in the States, but then very young moved back to Nigeria, where he was raised until he was 17 when he went back to America, and has been there ever since. This first book was only published in Nigeria, but he has been writing for The New Yorker, and he's written for The New York Times, papers like that. And, you know, he's an opinion writer as well as an author. So this is his first book. For us, his second one. It's a novella, is how it's termed by the publishers and maybe by himself. But, you know, I think it's a, I mean, it's a small point, but it's a novel. It feels like a novel. It's short. It's 160 something pages. But I mean, you know, Colm Tobin's book that was up for the Booker recently, 2 years ago, that was even shorter, and that was a novel. You know, to me, it's a substantial novel, even though it's quite small.
Now, what's interesting is you've given us the biographical details of the author there. And when you talk about the story here, it seems like it's set on familiar terrain for the writer.
Yeah.
Maybe outline or flesh out a little bit more about the character at the heart of this novel.
Yeah, so the narrator goes unnamed throughout the book. Much like Tatu Cole, he is of Nigerian origin. In this case, was born and brought up in Nigeria. Is living in America now, where he works as, he's trained as a doctor. He works as a doctor and he's specialising in psychiatry. And he's come back to Nigeria for the first time in 15 years. It doesn't specify, but we get the feeling he's probably around 33 years old, and he left just after secondary school and went to the States, and that's where he studied. So he's back now. It's been 15 years. He's back to see family, see some friends, and I guess that nostalgia you get for a place you haven't been for so long.
And do we know why he's back? I mean, is he there just to holiday or
to visit? Yeah, it seems to be a bit of a study break from psychiatry, but it seems like something was just drawing him back. And while he's there to see family, what he sees and what you would imagine the author must have seen when he himself went back to Nigeria was that the country had become hugely corrupt. In ways, it had was very progressive. It looked very Western. It looked like most capitalist societies that we would be familiar with. But underneath, everyone was taking bribes for everything. And not just, you know, the kind of hoodlums on the street, but those in very official capacities. So, when he arrives at the airport, the customs officials want a bribe of him just to let him through. When he's driving back to his aunt's house from the airport, there are police officers who, for no reason, just expect them to give him money so he can keep going. The place is riddled with corruption.
And that corruption even starts in America when he's at the embassy.
Yeah. He goes to get his passport at the Nigerian embassy in New York. And there are signs that say, you know, if anyone tries to take a bribe off you, you need to report it immediately. However, he has just given a bribe to the passport worker to get his passport speed up so he can get it within the week time that it's supposed to be delivered in anyway. But they tell him that without this extra money, you know, it's going to be a month. So he, of course, he has to hand over, and he's the equivalent of $50. No receipt for this, goes completely undocumented. And then he sees the sign saying report it. But who's he going to report it to? The person that he just gave the bribe to? You know, there's no contact number. It's bribes are very much accepted. And that's just a microcosm of what's actually going on in Nigeria.
But, you know, bribery and corruption is there in every society at every level. We know well about it here in Ireland. Does the author draw parallels then about the experience in Nigeria and, you know, Europe or America or
other
places?
He actually says that his time in America has softened him somehow, that he's more shocked that, of course, we have corruption here and there's corruption in the States. It's more cloak and daggers. It's done behind closed doors. You don't know about it. But this is very open. Everyone expects it. You know, it's at petrol stations. And actually, a very interesting section. There are internet cafes everywhere now in Lagos, in the capital of Nigeria. And this has become quite a new phenomenon. And he goes to one of the internet cafes and he sees people writing those 419 emails, which are the scam emails we'll all be familiar with, that say, oh, I've got a great offer. If you just invest a little bit, you'll get this huge return, or else, you know, I'm in terrible trouble, I need money quickly. And Nigeria is a really popular, a country of frequent origin for these emails. And he's sitting in an internet cafe and he looks over and he sees a man typing very slowly, not familiar with the keyboard, and he's writing these scam emails. And then he sees him copying in all these email addresses and sending them off. So it's amazing for him to have been in America where these emails are received all the time, but now to be sitting right beside the source of it.
But for you reading this then, did you find that he was challenging stereotypes, or was he reinforcing perceptions that there may be around life and corruption in Nigeria?
I don't know. I suppose for me, what was most interesting, what he looks at is Nigeria, which I didn't particularly know a lot about. And the corruption element is interesting. I mean, maybe isn't particularly appealing, but it is very interesting. But he also, in it, he goes to museums, the National Museum in Nigeria, which he had been dreaming about going to all his years in the States, and realises that even it has artefacts missing that people have given away as bribes, that there is very little of their legacy left. There's no little descriptions beside what exhibition items are left. There's no context. He notes as well in another interesting passage that Nigeria, which was a huge source of slaves during the slave trade for America, he says there were tens of thousands leaving in the early 1800s. Now there is nothing. They've just completely written over this part of history. There's no monument, there's no national day, because as he says, and which I think from our Celtic Tiger times is something that we could really tie in, he says, high times, the best cure for history. So basically, you know, now that there is more money and there's more wealth in Nigeria, they've forgotten what they've come from. He notes that he never sees people reading books, and when he does, that's what really encourages him, that little bit of culture, because Nigeria seems very caught up, from his description, in just its recent years and its recent wealth.
But, you know, are there any positives there? Is there any sense of a love letter to this homeland in the book here?
Those odd bits of culture. He sees a woman reading on a bus, and it's a beautiful thing for him. He goes to a musical school that's privately funded and so is quite well run, and there's an orchestra there, and that fills him with hope. There's family. He describes going through the cities. They're close. It's almost suffocating, the air, but there's something quite romantic about it for someone from Europe, this idea of Africa, you know, and all the bustling people. And it is, I felt, I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's a novel and a loose work of fiction, but it's travel writing too, for anyone that's interested in Nigeria. It's a beautiful, really eloquently written description, so very smart and very insightful as well. I mean, it made
me want to
go.
It sounds like, yeah. And I'm interested in knowing, you know, does he explain this need or drive for corruption?
Yeah.
Does he have sympathy for the people who are doing it because they're living in poverty,
well,
and trying to survive?
He makes a parallel with how popular Christian religion and that kind of more extreme folksy side of it has become in Nigeria, you know, hands-on healing, that kind of thing. And he can understand, or this comes to him, that there's a link between these two things, that people say, I am not sick, and so they are not sick, or this is what they believe anyway. Same as people say, you have to give me 50 whatever to cross the road, and people just assume, oh, well, you've said it, so now I must give you the money. And it's like they're all working off mantras that they all believe. And for him coming outside as an outsider, and which is how we would view it, it's quite obscene. But for people within Nigeria, it's what they expect.
It sounds like it was a read that really kind of you found very compelling. I mean, would you recommend it?
Absolutely, to everyone. It's so beautifully written. He is angry, you know, as you say, but it's so eloquently put, and he makes all his points very cleverly. Beautiful writer, and for him as a writer, you know, made me think that might be more of a memoir. But the character here is quite into books and things, so that rung true as well. Wonderful read.
Ethna Shortwell has been reading Every Day is for the Thief, and it's published by Random House.